My name is Jared, and I'm a compulsive overeater, worthy of unconditional love. And this is me. This is Jared back in the day. And I really look forward to sharing my experience, strength, and hope tonight with you guys. I wanted to first open up and just say thank you to Mary Ellen for asking me to participate this way, as well as Corrine, who helped me, navigate and get here this evening. So it's really nice to spend a Sunday evening with you guys and get to share my story of what was like, what it's like now, and where my hope comes from. So really looking forward to kind of walking you through my story. So just to kind of give you a little bit of a background quick, I'm from Ohio, came to Seattle in 2006. I really struggled with the transition from college to work. I got married, had three kids, became depressed and anxious, put on over 100 pounds, went to Overeaters Anonymous, came off the food, came out to myself, divorced in 2018, data dumped, joined two other rooms, and really I've started to come home to myself and really start to integrate within my body. And so relevant to the OA footsteps of, body image, relationships, and sexuality, sexuality going beyond just sexual orientation. My understanding is, I'll try to highlight some of those topics as, I share my story this evening. So food was my solution. So I grew up in Ohio, and the running joke about the Midwest is really, you go down to the main strip near the car dealership, and there's going to be an Applebee's, an Olive Garden, and a gas station. And so with that, you're given all these different options. And I was eating out 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 nights a week, is what it felt like with my parents. And the reason why I say above seven is because when I'd come home from school, I had two brothers. We'd wrestle over food. Specifically, when mom came home, we were going for the Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Because if you didn't go get for that and you got boxed out by your older brother and younger brother, next thing you know, you're eating Rice Krispies. And we all know, in that hierarchy for cereal, I'm definitely going for the Cinnamon Toast Crunch. So food was my solution to everything. I went ahead and was able to numb out all of my anxieties, all of my worries, and do the best I could with what I had, throughout my entire childhood. So I like to start all the way at like the beginning. I believe that I was sourced from love, and I come from a lineage of addiction. My parents stopped the drink, which was phenomenal. As I've continued to communicate with my mom and my dad and really just to rise the story, I learned that, there was tobacco use in our family. And, man, I could pretty much order for my whole family whenever we'd go to Applebee's. It was always my dad getting the tequila lime chicken and, X, Y, and Z, A, B, C, and D. I think the other thing too is my life looked optically fine. So we would eat out, we'd go out. I was part of a country club lifestyle. When a babysitter came over, it was like the best because we'd be given, pretty much pizzas, and then we get to go out and rent video games and continue to numb ourselves mentally, as much as physically as well. And really the story, right, is that I had complexities even at that young of an age. Because I didn't really know who I was. My parents didn't really talk about their feelings. Really didn't know how to adapt to the world I had. I had a doppelganger older brother that was effectively a clone of my dad. And so there really wasn't much relationship there because my dad was, pretty tough just in regards to having him pay attention to me. And so one of the things I recently came here and near the bottom is that I'm neurodiverse, which is really just things like ADHD, dyslexia. And so I've been formally diagnosed with those. And I do believe, doing a reflection back, that as part of that, I was eating to offset a lot of that as well, to manage and numb myself from the anxieties that those two, neurodiversities gave me. that led into some teenage confusion. And so this is my, 16-year-old self. This is Jared, who loves to listen to Backstreet Boys, but then at the same time, love to listen to metal music. This is me wearing my high school golf shirt, with the pop collar and feeling pretty edgy. This really represents really a rebellious time, and also a very confused time. I love that Jared just as much as I loved the Jared image from before, because this Jared like was really with it. He knew all the rap lyrics to pretty much every album to fit in at school. He also would go on to be everybody's best friend, in the yearbook. That was what was told to me. Here are some other fun facts. Like, we had the national jump rope team come out of my middle school. It's called the Heartbeats. And one of the things I missed out on, making that team was, the ability of doing a double under. And the Presidential Fitness, sorry, nobody really told me if it's okay, so I'm just going to go ahead and do it. But I'm a somebody who likes to speak in vulgarities. And so the Presidential Fitness really fucked me up. Missing the basketball team really fucked me up. I was much better at math than I was at reading. Well, it's because I didn't really know at the time I had dyslexia or ADHD. So I went to a reading specialist. So I have to give credit to my mom. But effectively, what they did was they just did a film strip and they showed it one word at a time. Like, this guy knows what's going on. And I'm like, well, this is easy when I have the pressure and fear of person looking over my shoulder at a young age. I'm going to be able to do whatever it is. You stick a threat to me, I am going to do whatever you want me to do, because that was my survival mechanism being fully triggered. And so if you needed me to read a page on a book, I will do it, but I will adrenalize myself absolutely stupid, effectively eliminating myself. Homecoming, survival, like just getting asked to any of those types of groups to participate in getting to be a dance was always difficult. So it wasn't necessarily the fear of asking somebody and getting rejected. It was like, who am I going to go with? Like, who am I going to be affiliated with? Like the codependency nature of like, well, if I choose my best friend Chris, he's a nerd. So like, am I going to choose that? Or, hey, like I should really ask out Melinda because she's really hot. And because I'm going to ask Melinda out, like, who am I going to have to affiliate with? Like, that's the level my hypervigilance was like all about, because all I had was my outside image. I was pretty much playing the Instagram game in my head for all these years. Like, I need my outsides to look better than your outsides, because my outsides being better than your outsides made me feel safe. That was my solution. So what did I do to channel all that? I got really hyper competitive. So my older brother, very, very good golfer. My next door neighbors, Ivy League. Next door neighbors from there, All American athletes. And so being a kid who was eating six, seven nights a week, numbing myself with food, eating fourth and fifth meals, hiding animal crackers in my bed, stealing, food from from the kitchen and taking it up to my room so that my brothers wouldn't eat it, so that I could eat it in the middle of the night. Just things like that. I ended up kind of getting into like exercise bulimia as well. So I, from the rooms of OA, I kind of came to understand that exercise bulimia is the concept of binging and then offsetting it with exercise. So I still have those temptations today. If I have kind of like a meal where I maybe eat a little bit more than I'd like, and then I feel the need, it's a lot easier, let's just say, to go work out because I know that I need to go, quote unquote, burn off the remainder of that additional eating. And so to me, I have to be open-handed with regards to how I manage my movement after, eating and how that correlates. In addition to that, I had a, what I'd call a fetish as well. So as a high sensory person, one of my fetishes is I like nylon and pantyhose. And with that became a fetish and a humongous source of shame for me. Like, tremendous, like even more than ultimately coming out to myself. And that definitely is part of my story because I ate over that shit. And so I'd eat over it. And then because of my competitive nature and the sports I got into, I just pretty much burned it off. I have to say, college was my peak happiness. So this is me. Like this body image here, I'm still presidential fit, or presidential fitness running 14-minute miles is what this guy thinks he is. He's dated one girl in high school, kissed her, held her hand, and got really excited because he held her hand and had like this real childlike, thing of love from All the Family Matters and Full House episodes that he watched. Like his emulation was like this Jared learned how to participate and love others based on the way he would watch endless television. And so like when I was younger, I was fat. And with that, like I look at this and I'm like, man, like I was skinny and I was fit and I was strong. And at the same time, I was an exercise bulimic. And I have to pause there because it was just pretty devastating. Like I remember in, let's see here. It would have been like a year before this photo. I ended up like going to Ultimate Practice, getting high, dominating a cheesecake, and then going out for a 4 mile run after dominating a whole cheesecake. And the word domination is hyperbolic, but it's also pretty much the only word. And this is meant to be a little bit of a joke. Like it's like the only word that can describe the way that I took that down. And, the other mistake in this photo is kind of this necklace right here. I definitely made a bad decision wearing that necklace at that time. And that also is meant to be a joke. And this puka shell. So I had to definitely erase myself a little bit because I love all these Jareds as well. I especially love this Jared. For again, another off-topic joke is the fact that this is a Jared who's in a house of social justice students, and I was the only fiscal conservative, so I was the debate machine, effectively emulating the negativist dad that I grew up with, which was a lot of fun. So college was peak happiness, but then, okay, what? Like transition to adulthood, what would that look like? So I'm from Ohio, came to Seattle. So what do? I start at a large accounting firm. And then I meet my friend, and he's from Hawaii. So I get to go to Hawaii. It was incredible. So after college, I was able to manage my energy because I had breaks throughout the day. So when I came out to Seattle, I had to work. And the concept of a work day killed me. I started having performance issues working for a large accounting firm. I never had problems before. I ended up resigning effectively after these performance issues because somebody came and told me effectively that they're going to coach me out. So my first job out of college, leaving my family of origin to come all the way out here, and I wouldn't call it a failure, but it was going to be a failure. And so at the time, I was really insecure. I lived with a roommate, loved this guy still to this day. He brought me to a large church in Seattle, and they had an opportunity there. It was, if you typed in the name of the, Seattle and church back in the, mid 20, 2000s, the church. And so I went and worked, at this church. It was incredible. Tremendous privilege to be a part of that church. I met some amazing people. However, there was definitely some problems being a part of this community as well. Things like toxic masculinity, and things like that that really impacted and pushed me in the wrong direction based on fears. 2008, met my future wife. And again, beautiful woman, beautiful soul. But again, everything was super complex. So as things got more complex, the white knuckling increased. So that's why you see those hashtags of complex next to each. And if you're on the podcast, I'm trying to verbalize as much as possible. So again, going to work really effed me up. It increased the complexities because in college I was able to take an hour break here to go work out in the middle of the day. So as you can see here, compared to the photos before, you can see a little bit more roundedness in the face. This was the night I passed my CPA exam and like I think the third date I was on with my future wife. Then things got even more complex. I married into debt, over $250,000 in debt. I couldn't stand up to her. I married somebody who's in a field where, posturing is very, very important. 295 pounds in 2017, got up to 315 in late 2017 as well. And I thought my solution was to go get an MBA because we were so much in debt. Used fear. But this is some of the amends when I look back at this relationship. I was avoiding reality. And I got that MBA in the name of avoiding my marriage and avoiding myself and chasing a fourth and fifth meal. I was introduced to donors and kebabs and Vietnamese sandwiches on the University of Washington campus. Huge Vietnamese influence here in Seattle. So phenomenal pho, phenomenal Vietnamese sandwiches. Like I would eat before and after class. So I'd eat in the morning, eat my lunch, snack in between, coffee myself stupid, and then go to school and have two to three more meals. And then taking the animal crackers that were for my kids and making the big bag evaporate over the course of a week. So this is me on my wedding day. My weight just continued to increase. This is me after our first kid. Love that guy. I think the thing that, again, just being as vulnerable as possible, I did not want to be a father when I became a father. And I'm still wrestling with the fact that I am a father. I honestly disassociate when I'm with my kids, even today. And there's not as much judgment today as there was. However, there's still judgment there because I'm responsible for three lives in this world, and they're under somebody else's roof. And I'm reminded every 2 weeks that I did not necessarily want to have kids. And the answer as to why I didn't want to have kids is when I give to my kids in the name of what I wanted from my dad and from my mom. And I didn't get it. And so it hurts me to give what I really wanted. And I can sit with that and not go to the food these days because I'm much more aware and I have tools of recovery that enable me to do that. And that's something that was really important to me. Things continue to get complex, so my weight continues to increase. So you can see these photos where the weight just continues to get more and more. And so it was right around here that I came into the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous. And so what brought me to the rooms was a therapist. Stanford educated, I need somebody to get out in front of my brain. My hypervigilant brain is like, you need to prove to me that my solution is not that. Because when I heard Overeaters Anonymous, I just about laughed because I tried everything. And so when he said it, I thought about the movie Fight Club. And I was like, I'm going to be Tyler Durden hugging one of you guys in the middle of a basement, getting the sweaty armpit smell of this guy right here, of Bob. And what I got was something completely different. I got love and I heard my story. I saw people with clear eyes. I heard this guy tell a story one time about how he was struggling, and he one of his challenges was that when he was driving by his local, convenience store, he'd go in and he'd already have dominated his, fourth bag at home of Oreos and needed more. And so he would go buy his fifth bag, he would eat his sixth bag, and he would steal his seventh bag while in the store. I'm going to pause because I see Leah with, I'm guessing her hand up. Would you like to say something? I'm unsure of the format. I will take that as no need. Okay. Feel free to come off mute if you need to say something, please. So what my experience though was home. And so that's a 20-minute reminder, so I'll take another 10 minutes. It was a home. And it's what keeps me coming back. I've never met you guys and I feel safe. I don't feel alone. Why? Because I have the principles of this program. And even if things were to get out, even if this whole recording was to get out and it compromised my work, I think I'm okay with that because I'm carried by God and a power greater than myself, a power outside of me. All of those words, you know, even though I don't necessarily like the name God, even coming from a church community, even though I don't like a power greater than myself, I want somebody to sit with me. And so I identify more with the power outside of myself, starting even with the air I breathe. I call my spiritual power electric blue because I think about when I breathe in, like, what are some of the additional senses that I breathe in? And the color that comes to my heart is an electric blue color. I'm blessed to be here. My life is so unmanageable. I am powerless over food. I have come to believe that I cannot do it and I need help. I don't need your validation. I don't need to be everybody's best friend like I was in my yearbook. I need support. I'm at mile marker 21. I'm exhausted. To those that are new today to this room, the courage to show up tonight is more important than my speech. To the newcomer who still suffers, I welcome you. From Logan, Utah, thank you for saying something. I have received love and will receive love and until I can love myself. That is what my experience was in the rooms. Safety is my rock to the scissors of fear. Some of the sayings in this program are so cheesy, and yet they are the everything because they're so true when I try to disprove them. They even become more true, and I find them hilarious in the fact that how helpful they are. I love it. If you want kind of additional insights as to who I really resonate with, I highly recommend podcasts. OA Footsteps is also amazing. I had not heard about it until a couple of weeks, but when I scanned the site in preparation for tonight, I observed that it's a great entry point. However, I'm a huge fan of the OA LA Intergroup podcast and Cass A. If you're out there, give me a shout because I'd love to chat with you someday. But her story is my story. I just absolutely. Everything she says, her recovery is incredible. Look at this duration from 2003 to 2019. And I hope, you know, that she's still in program, so I'm sending vibes her way. So what does my abstinence look like? Meetings, no recreational sugar, no artificial sweeteners. I have a warm glass here with some lemon water in it. That's my jam. I think it's can be summarized in the fact that I could drink over a gallon of Crystal Light in a day, absolutely no problem. But effectively, I was putting sweetener and dopamine sensors into my brain, and for me, that was just too much. I never knew how freaking amazing a strawberry could taste once I got off sweeteners. So then, where are my potential landmines now that I'm in abstinence? It's really in things like exercise. I have orange foods and, you know, yellow foods and green foods and red foods, also called the red light, yellow light, green light foods. I wear my abstinence like a loose garment. For me, that's what's been working. I used effectively an inverted elimination. So, getting, you know, speaking to a newcomer, it would be think of, okay, if I'm eating dessert every evening, what type of dessert am I eating? All right, I'm going to eat a super calorie dense cheesecake every night. Cool. So instead of doing a cheesecake, I may change to a cookie. But cheesecake now becomes a red light food. Let's see how I do without the cheesecake. And so, with the help of a sponsor, I went through that experience. So it goes beyond food too. I just want to highlight one, which is just compulsive spending can also be a problem for me. So that Amazon buy now button, that's a no-no. I need additional help as well. So I go outside of the program for help. And my solution though is to do the 12 steps and to be the be and do the do. This is a program of action. And I have outside support, but my solution is in this program and in another program, which I'll, cross the streams and say it's to become my own loving parent. Being seen is being safe. So I wrote down here some of the steps in my own words. I don't necessarily think that it's, too relevant, but if people would like to have this, I'm happy to send an image or two if there's a slide that impacted you. Food to feels, thinking to listening. So this has kind of been my experience. Without food, I felt. So feelings are feelings, and that was very uncomfortable. So embracing the sucks sucks. Embracing the sucking is effectively endurance. And so the way like a deer hide is stretched between two trees, it can become strong. I had been doing the program through thinking, a program of discovery. But from my understanding, there's a thing called recovery, and I needed to start recovering, which is doing the do. I need to take action. And so that's been through prayer and meditation. I've recently started yoga. Again, outside solution, but it's a way for me to get to myself so that I can actually take the actions of 12 steps more effectively from a more mindful and centered place. Another tool that I use to get me there to the tools of recovery. So for a newcomer, the tools of recovery can be things like picking up the telephone and calling somebody in this room. It could be the literature, so picking up some of the literature or a new pamphlet. There's tools to this program that can really help participate. And then from my experience, I had to do some things outside to be able to better support so that I could take those calls. So what happened? So as you kind of heard at the top of the call, I mean, I came out, I divorced, but I did so in the rooms. And so all this anxiety started coming off. And so did the weight. And so to really simplify it and maybe talk to somebody who's outside of the program, I said it was mindset that led into more mindful eating and feelings. Feeling the feelings. And then I just so happened to move my body. So no exercise. I never exercised. I moved. I didn't diet because I didn't restrict. I gave my food over. This is when I moved back to Seattle from a dating relationship down in Portland for a hot minute. And this was last Easter. There's a couple extra things that I wanted to talk about with regards to kind of summarizing to you the stories of the OA footsteps with the remaining minute and a half that I have, which is body image. One of the things I'm currently working on and where my hope comes from is that the thing I'm currently working on is. It's getting to know my inner children and my inner teen and my adult self to be able to know what my body actually looks like, what the reality looks like. And the reality takes data points. I don't weigh myself. The only time I weigh myself is at the doctor's office. And I can tell you right now, I'm 215 pounds. And I really don't care if it's 5 pounds more, 5 pounds less, frankly, because guess what? There's a new thing called water. And if you need me to be 222 pounds in about an hour, I probably could do that with water ingestion and based on the fiber intake that I have. The other thing that body image impacts is like I still can't take off a shirt when I go to the to a swimming pool. Always has been like that. Even when I got down to like 195, I had a struggle with that. There's just this.
All right, can you guys hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, sorry about that. My headset went dead. So I'm going to wrap up because my time is up. But relationships and sexuality, I feel like we've covered some of that. I think from an intimacy standpoint, my body image did not necessarily get in the way of my intimacy. However, it did get in the way of the intimacy of my partner. My partner, my ex-wife at the time, as things were getting worse and worse and worse, she was more effectively turned off to where I got physically, not physically, I got verbally abused, excuse me, to get to the gym and things like that. Like, you just don't care. You don't care about me. You won't go XYZ, ABC. And that, beyond invalidating, I see it as abuse and forgiveness and amends, have been undergoing and have been made in some of those areas. And then with intimacy, I'm struggling with the shame of, these newfound understandings, and we've kind of talked about that at length. So, in sum, thank you so much for the opportunity to share. Again, shout out to Mary Ellen and to all of you guys for being here. I just really appreciate it. Thanks.